Welcome to Streaming Into the Void, where we discuss all the streaming news for the week ending April 12th, 2024. I'm Kim Hollis, and I spend more time designing my Baldur's Gate 3 character than playing it. It's true.
I was going to ask if you even got to like play the game yet. It's kind of like you're paying for the character creator, and then like the game is just a bonus.
It is, yes. I have started playing. I did definitely spend a lot of time creating the perfect little tiefling druid. With me are Tim Bridey, content creator and gamer, but not the new Japan champion.
But I finished the story.
Hooray! Also, David Mumpower, author of Behind the Ride and streaming media analyst, who wishes to congratulate a former AEW champion on winning the world title.
All right, Tim's intro steps on mine because I was going to say congratulations on finishing the story, John Moxley.
That's right. And the podcast is produced and edited by Raul Buriel, who's got jury duty on Monday. Oh, no.
Guilty.
Say hi to James Marsden for us.
Yeah, just say you're going to find him guilty. That'll get you out of there quick, except it won't. This week, it's boardroom shenanigans. No, not at Disney. That's over with. But a couple of former board members at Warner Brothers Discovery are in hot water with the Department of Justice. Stephen Newhouse and Steve Miron resigned from the board when it was revealed that they were under investigation. Both Newhouse and Miron, who joined the board when Discovery merged with Warner Brothers, are also on the board of Charter Communications, which the DOJ considers a competitor to WBD.
Is that not allowed? Warner Brothers Discovery licenses cable channels to cable companies like Charter Communications. I'm pretty sure you shouldn't be on the board of both companies.
The real question is how this was allowed as long as it was, and that speaks to some other stuff we're not going to get into. But yeah, this was ridiculous, and it was also a purpose pitch from the Department of Justice saying, Zaslav, we know you're going to try some shady stuff. We're letting you know right now it's not going to fly. If you're going to do anything that is going to be bad for your current employees, they've suffered enough. They've lived under you for years now. Stop it. Don't think about it. Quit it. And that's where we're at with this, where Warner Brothers Discovery can officially start shopping itself around to figure out if it's going to buy something, sell itself, or merge with something. And the Department of Justice just said, we're watching you.
Warner Brothers Discovery isn't the only Hollywood studio whose board is in chaos. Battle lines are being drawn at Paramount as competing bids for the company are on the table. Four Paramount directors have announced that they'll resign because of Sherry Redstone's decision to go with the Skydance bid.
Yeah, some quick background here for anyone who hasn't listened to our podcast for several months now. Paramount is in debt and facing an uncertain future as consumers move from linear TV to streaming. Paramount has been tightening up its bottom line, selling off assets and shutting down departments. And in fact, just this week, it was revealed that the standalone Showtime streaming service would be shutting down at the end of the month. That's in 2.5 weeks. And Adweek also reported that Paramount is exploring the sale of VidCon, the YouTube convention that they bought from authors and YouTube educators John and Hank Green back in 2018. With the stock price of Paramount deeply depressed, there's been some interest in buying the studio, but the ownership structure of Paramount is making things really complicated. National Amusements, which is controlled by the Redstone family, holds a controlling stake in Paramount, but they do not have a majority of the stock in Paramount. An offer from Apollo Global for Paramount would be favorable to Paramount's stockholders, but not necessarily to National Amusements. Meanwhile, Skydance chief executive David Ellison, the son of billionaire Larry Ellison, has mustered together a group to buy National Amusements, a bid that would be favorable to the Redstone family, but not necessarily to Paramount stockholders.
Long story short, in the, I guess, Hamilton vernacular, you don't have the votes. These four board of directors members were 4 out of 11, which means they were losing 7-4 votes anyway. And they've just said, fine, we can't win. We don't want to be a part of this. This is going to be destructive to everyone involved. We're getting out. And this just circles back to what we've been saying about Paramount for, I mean, really 2 years now, which is this is a complicated process. Paramount made decisions a few years ago with its merger that have now proven problematic. And the reality is only one person is going to decide what happens next. And that's Sherry Redstone, which we've point blank said here. And other people involved with this are like, I don't want this on my resume after the fact. I don't want the accountability for a decision I didn't make. And that is completely reasonable. And Raul, we were joking about this the other day, but it is the honest God's truth. We still don't know what Paramount is worth relative to what it's actually going to get, because that is just the lingering mystery here. And the way this is going to break, the financials of it may never actually determine that, as wild as that is to say, but this is just mess.
Yeah, I read one report that implied that Paramount would actually buy Skydance instead of the other way around, but then Skydance would essentially be absorbed into Paramount with a bag full of money. So it's a really weird transaction. The bottom line here, the fact of the matter is that Paramount cannot continue to exist in its current state. It's going to be bought, or hopefully it'll get bought. Otherwise, the fate of the studio is going to be very much up in the air. In my personal opinion, I feel that the Ellison Skydance offer is more favorable to the company, and it's probably going to see a cash infusion, while the Apollo offer may be more favorable to stockholders, who would then probably want to cash out almost immediately. Because if there's one thing we know about investment firms, is that they're very good at selling off assets for parts and milking every penny from anything they buy.
And still, we wonder why nobody wants Byron Allen's money.
Lastly, there's reportedly layoffs underway at Netflix in their film department as Dan Lin steps in to replace former head Scott Stuber.
Yes, Stuber's tenure at Netflix got him a bad reputation with talks that his productions had that Netflix sheen. I think actually that term should be trademarked by one of our former co-hosts, Reagan. That is despite the willingness by Netflix to pour tons of money into their projects. Stuber, though, was a champion for theatrical releases, having come to Netflix from Universal Studios. Reportedly, he frequently advocated for fewer, better movies at Netflix and theatrical releases, but he was constantly overruled. Stuber finally resigned from Netflix earlier this year, and he's been replaced by Dan Lin, who's had smashing success at Warner Brothers with the Lego Movie franchise, and at one point had the inside track on taking over the DC franchise at Warner Brothers before David Zaslav opted to reboot everything. Arguably, Lin has the same view of movie making as Stuber does. The layoffs, frankly, seem rather minimal and probably reflect Lin bringing in his own people and Stuber's team leaving the company. What all this means for movie making at Netflix right now, I think we're just going to have to wait and see.
Yeah, I mean, I think that you've touched on exactly what matters here. First of all, this is not the first time you're hearing Lin's name on the podcast. As Raul mentioned, for a time, it appeared that he was going to take over the DC universe. And we have talked on several occasions about how much of a potential opportunity that is for somebody to become the next Kevin Feige. However, thus far, it is, for the most part, it has proven an albatross rather than something helpful to anyone's career. So Lin is now platforming to something that's frankly better and safer. We know for a fact that Netflix can sell anything to its customers, which means that all he needs to do is make good movies and not give a lot of pushback on, hey, should we be doing this in theaters? Because that is obviously a non-starter within the company. And as long as he keeps his mouth shut about that, he's going to come out of this looking great. Stuber couldn't do that because his ego could not accept the fact that he wasn't doing what he had always wanted to do career-wise, and that's what led to this. I'm actually even uncomfortable calling this layoffs. This is just transition to a new team.
Okay, Tim, before we talk about the ratings, let's discuss the box office.
Sure, it's been a week or two since we've looked at it. Last weekend, Godzilla X Kong, The New Empire, in its second weekend was tops, $31.2 million and $134.5 million after 10 days. So yeah, pretty good. Still hanging on. It's going to be well over $150 million after this weekend. But your top movie for this Friday is Civil War, $10.8 million on Friday, with $2.9 million of that coming on Thursday. I have a hard time trying to figure this one out because it's such a very weird film. It's A24, so therefore it obviously is not as it seems. It is a, you know, fictionalized account on a future U.S. Civil War, and it's more of like almost like documentary-ish style rather than like focusing on, you know, say soldiers or anything like that. It's like focusing on like reporters and photographers, so it's very strange. We were talking about this in the pre-show, David. This is the lowest cinema score any movie has gotten in 2024 so far?
Correct. It got a B-, which means that most audiences masses disliked it, but it's not, you know, an absolute wipeout. And Tim, you pointed out our friend Scott Mendelson had a really good joke about this.
Yeah, he's a friend of ours from the Box Office Profits days. And he said, as we all know, any A24 film that gets above a C- from CinemaScore results in the filmmaker being beaten. So
maybe A24 should be making all of the films for Netflix. Does that sound about right?
Yes, I would agree.
But yeah, this is exactly what I would have expected to be. It's going to get a one weekend pop and they're going to try and say it's a buzzy film, but probably not. And realistically, you know, this is a hot button issue and they tried something. And I think the results are, you know, middling, possibly on the high side. Sam, what do you think of the performance?
Yeah, this is fine. The concept and the trailer actually were really interesting. It is 83% fresh, but I think based on that CinemaScore, audiences are watching and going, that's not what I expected it would be. So yeah, it's going to come in with, you know, under $30 million for the weekend, which is totally fine. I didn't check the budget, but it's going to collapse from here.
$50 million budget, so it's going to be profitable.
Okay, that's good. But yeah, I don't expect it to hold on too well in following weekends. But we are in April. We're ramping up to some bigger movies in the next several weeks. So I'm curious to see what happens with the summer box office.
Awesome. Let's go ahead and move on to the ratings.
Okay. Yeah, we have the Nielsen streaming ratings for Monday, March 11th to Sunday, March 17th, 2024. And our top show is The Gentlemen, 1.8 billion minutes for 8 episodes. That's excellent for the first full week of its release. This was the Guy Ritchie series.
Yeah, 600 million minute pop from last week. So it seems to have held an audience.
Yeah, that seems outstanding to me.
Yeah, and Guy Ritchie is now championing for a season two, which hasn't been confirmed yet, but it strikes me that this is the type of performance where it's likely. It seems like it is done better than the Three Body Problem at a cheaper price. At least that's what we think before the official Nielsen numbers start coming in for Three Body Problem.
And it could just be how I've curated my social media, but I have seen more people talking about Three Body Problem than this. So I'm curious to see where that lands when we finally get the ratings for that in a couple more weeks. Still in second, 1.4 billion minutes for Love is Blind, 83 total episodes. Hopefully this is the final time we have to talk about it for a little while. It added one more episode, the reunion for its sixth season on March 13th. I was talking about this before and I mentioned it in previous weeks. Like, I don't recall any other season of this show just exploding like this. So I'm curious to see if it's whether it's just because of it's been around so long now, it's got a strong enough following, or something interesting happened this season that caused people to gravitate to it. Based on the history, we should get another one in the fall. So I'm curious to see what happens in a future season. But to add just one more episode and still crack a billion, that's impressive. New in third, Turning Point, The Bomb and the Cold War, 621 million minutes for a 9-episode docuseries about the Cold War and World War II. Lots of talking head interviews about this, and it's definitely interesting if you're a history buff. And hey, that's better than true crime. I'll take that any day of the week. Avatar The Last Airbender is still here in fourth, 502 million minutes for 8 episodes. And returning in fifth, Blown Away, 489 million minutes for 40 total episodes. This is the fourth season of the glass-blowing reality competition, arrived on March 8th. Oh, this is apparently a Canadian show, and then it gets aired on Netflix simultaneously. Interesting.
It's amazing to me that this particular show just continually does well whenever they release a new season.
Yeah, if you've ever seen a glassblower, that it is kind of a fascinating skill. So I kind of get the hook on this one. It's just interesting that there's enough people either, you know, doing it or interested in doing it that they're able to sustain a series such as this.
I'm surprised with all the, let's say, 420 content that will be premiering this coming week on streamers, that another Canadian reality show, The Great Canadian Pottery Throwdown, hosted and produced by Seth Rogen, isn't coming to U.S. streamers anytime soon.
All right, so Netflix has dominated the top five, but we have a little bit of more variety in the bottom half of the originals chart. In new in sixth is Apples Never Fall. This is from Peacock, 476 million minutes viewed for 7 episodes. This is a drama series starring Annette Bening that arrived on March 14th. So that's actually really strong for Peacock for just the weekend number. They definitely marketed this one. I know I got an email about it. I actually thought it was a movie, but it turns out to be a series.
Yeah, it's a pretty impressive supporting cast. Honestly, it seems like the kind of content you would find on Hulu. So I'd forgotten this is actually on Peacock. But there is definitely a niche audience for this kind of adult drama, evidently a strong enough one that it put the show on the ratings.
Yeah, I think you're right. If I had to guess what service this would be on based on the description, I would have gone with Hulu first. But yeah, no, it's Peacock.
That's hilarious. I had remembered it as an Apple TV Plus series. And for the, basically the same reason.
Apple is in the title.
Fair enough. But that is the way I had remembered it. And I actually had to fact check. Did they get that right on Peacock? And it was me who failed the fact check. But if you recall, when we were talking about this, it did build a mystery about, you know, what the mother was up to. And it was enough of a mystery that, like, I had to ask him what the story was actually about. So I thought that they marketed it effectively.
Yeah, this is actually originally a novel that they've managed to adapt into a 7-episode series. So interesting. I'm curious if we'll see it again next week because this is just the weekend figure. Speaking of Hulu, they are still here in 7th with Shogun. Now 4 episodes, 408 million minutes. And this will be weekly through the next month of ratings. So still a lot of room to grow, but that's still impressive for, and then, you know, Disney had said this has done very, very well for them. Back to Netflix for 8th and 9th, couple shows we've seen before. The Signal is 8th, 377 million minutes. And the program Cons, Cults, and Kidnapping is 9th, 357 million minutes for 3 episodes. And returning in 10th is Masters of the Air from Apple TV Plus, 330 million minutes for 9 episodes. On the movies chart, your top movie for the week is still Damsel, 1.5 billion minutes from Netflix. So that's absolutely just crushing it, the Millie Bobby Brown movie. But here's the big news for the week in 2nd from Disney Plus, Taylor Swift, The Eras Tour, Taylor's version, 677 million minutes, arriving on the 14th. So just a weekend figure, but I would attribute this to one. I think we'll see it go higher next week. And also there has to be a ton of second screen viewing that's not accounted in these ratings for this.
I mean, it's only a half week rating, so you basically double it. It is, you know, a little bit noteworthy that 11 has beaten Taylor Swift in round one. And this is probably the closest it's going to be. You know, I would expect an uptick for a full week of the Eras Tour. But what we're seeing here is just the gap between Netflix and Disney overall.
Oh, yeah.
And the other thing is Damsel is legitimately on the first half of 2024. This is arguably Netflix's biggest theatrical. So, you know. They timed it well, and it is a big win for Netflix, but Disney is just absolutely brilliant for what they've done with the Eras Tour.
Yeah, I actually expect the Eras Tour to hang around for a little while. We are ramping up to, well, there are new songs on it that weren't in the original theatrical release, but not there's any new music. We are getting close to next week actually is Taylor Swift's newest album. So she's already everywhere, but now she's even more everywhere as this is coming. So I think this one will actually hang around quite some time because it's just going to be background viewing. We're just multiple watches for all the Swifties. Kim, you said you watched it more than once already, right?
I have. I've watched it probably 4 or 5 times at this point.
And oh, yeah.
I'll watch it again. It's great to have on while I'm working. It's good.
It's fun. Yeah. She's even got a Sirius XM station on right now. I threw that on at work. And even though not all of us would consider ourselves Swifties, we were all kind of vibing to it. So I totally get it. New in third, Irish Wish. From Netflix, 583 million minutes. This is the Lindsay Lohan romantic comedy arriving on March 15th. So just the weekend figure here. So that's pretty good. And I assume that we'll see a little higher next week then.
I think a review from New York Magazine's Vulture is probably more entertaining than that movie. The article is titled, Irish Wish is a crypto-fascist AI-generated harbinger of doom. Read that instead.
Feels like more work went into that review than just the movie. Wow. Okay. Yeah, it's just, you know, it's Netflix, it's Lindsay Lohan, it's a rom-com, it's, you know, it's disposable, it wasn't reviewed well, but what do you really expect? Wonka, we saw that arrive last week from Max, is here in 4th, 526 million minutes. And that's actually a better hold than I would have expected. Of note, Aquaman is gone, but that's no surprise. We expected that. So in 5th, I think we have one of the first instances of an Oscar bump in the actual movies ratings because Poor Things is still here in 5th from Hulu, 376 million minutes after kind of surprisingly winning a couple awards, including Best Actress.
Yeah, I don't actually even consider it a bump. I understand why you're saying that, but it just debuted last week and it's kind of, you know, steady with last week's performance. And just generally speaking, these Hulu films films often do sneak on the list right at the start. They rarely have staying power. That's kind of a curiosity we have about Hulu at this point is people will watch something like right when it comes out and then they'll forget about it for the most part. As a matter of fact, that was one of the things you all pointed out about Vacation Friends is that the first film at least had staying power relative to a Hulu title. Mm-hmm. This is, you know, if there is a bump, it's the fact that it actually made the charts a second week. I don't read as much into that as you do, but, you know, obviously there is going to be interest in something that won, I want to say, 4 Academy Awards. I mean, it was the second most successful film of the year in terms of awards contention anyway.
Yes, it did win 4 Academy Awards, which was second to Oppenheimer, which is also on the list this week. But yeah, I think that's mainly what it is I wasn't expecting it to see it a second time after it premiered on Hulu. But the day before this ratings week is when the Oscars were. So I'm kind of attributing it to people deciding to watch it based on that, especially considering it's what it's about. Non-Oscar winner Ricky Stenicki is still here in 6, 336 million minutes from Prime Video. Okay. So yeah, I said that we got a second week.
But it does feature an Academy Awards presenter. Does that count?
Maybe they were intrigued by John Cena's performance at the Academy Awards where they decided
performance. Oh, okay.
Appearance? What? Was John Cena mostly nude enough for people to watch Ricky Stenicki on Prime Video? Possibly, but we'll see. We'll never know for sure. But here it is still in 6 from Prime Video. Anyway, in 7th, the Super Mario Brothers movie still here, 327 million minutes from Netflix. Moana, 324 million minutes from Disney Plus. Oppenheimer, winner of the most Academy Awards this year, in 9th, 286 million minutes. This is, of course, on Peacock. And somehow, despite no longer being on Netflix, even though Nielsen still says it is, Dune is in 10th, 285 million minutes. People were then either watching this before or after seeing Dune Part 2 in theaters, but again, not on Netflix. It's only on Hulu or Max. Acquired is 10 shows we have seen before, led once again by Bluey, 1 billion minutes for 150 episodes. Grey's Anatomy, now credited to Hulu and Netflix, is up to 830 million minutes in second. I find that very interesting. And Brooklyn Nine-Nine, very strong as well, because now that's on Netflix as opposed to just Peacock, 819 million minutes. Otherwise, it's shows the usual suspects that we've seen before, but nothing new this week outside of that interesting top three. But yeah, that's all for the ratings. A pretty quiet week, but those are big numbers for, you know, The Gentleman and Damsel, but that's the second week for both. And I'm curious to see what happens with the Eras Tour over the next couple weeks.
Also, just stay tuned because I noticed that White Collar is on Netflix now. I think it showed up on April 1st, maybe. So yeah, another one of those USA shows that might just make its appearance on the charts.
Put Psych on Netflix, you cowards.
Give them time. Okay, thank you, Tim. In green lights and cancellations this week, actor Kit Harington revealed in an interview this week that a rumored Game of Thrones spinoff featuring Jon Snow will not be moving forward at HBO and Max. He indicated that they couldn't find the right story to tell.
There's a number of factors here. This would have been a direct sequel to Game of Thrones, and given fan reaction to the last season, maybe not moving ahead with a spinoff was the right choice. It would have been like when Joey got a spinoff from Friends. Then there's also the factor that author George R.R. Martin remains unable to deliver the latest and maybe last book in his Song of Ice and Fire series, which could be blamed for the lackluster final season of Game of Thrones and why producers couldn't find a path forward with Jon Snow. But the fact of the matter is here that Warner Bros. Discovery likes to make money and quality is rarely a factor at play here. It would certainly have been a successful show on HBO and Max, but it would also have cost a lot of money to make. And that's not something that they're willing to commit these days.
They did cast the Dunk and Egg series, though, with what, a rugby player and a child. So I think it's partly price as well.
Yeah, the too long didn't read version of this story is Kit Harington said, hey, I would like to be paid for this role. And Zaslav said, no.
Yes. Apple TV Plus and Legendary have announced that they'll be moving ahead with a second season of Monarch: Legacy of Monsters, as well as multiple spinoffs.
This is the streaming series companion to Legendary's Godzilla and King Kong movies. And in light of the surprising success a couple of weeks ago to their latest Monster Fest, it's then therefore no surprise that a second season got greenlit.
Too long, didn't read. They met Godzilla and Kong's clothes.
Over at Amazon MGM Studios, Deadline is reporting that Reese Witherspoon and her Hello Sunshine production company are working on a Legally Blonde spinoff series.
It should be noted here that not everything produced by Amazon MGM Studios, which is the company that emerged when Amazon merged their Amazon Studios with MGM, actually comes to Prime Video or Freevee or MGM Plus. It's really anyone's guess where this series lands.
There was a story in December that Hello Sunshine had lost 90% of its profits during the pandemic and hadn't gotten them back. And I picture its corporate overlord, Candle Media, saying, okay, at this point we need a hit. You're doing Legally Blonde, period.
Amazon MGM Studios is also collaborating with the BBC to produce more seasons of the John le Carré series, The Night Manager, whose first season aired in the United States on AMC back in 2016.
I remember this series on AMC. It was really good. It had Tom Hiddleston, who we love in shows like Loki. And it does look, for what it's worth, that this one will in fact be coming to Prime Video.
And there's more Prime Video news, as it was reported this week that producers of their latest sensation, Fallout, have accepted tax credits to take production of their series from New York to California. A second season of Fallout has not yet been officially announced.
Wait, I haven't had a chance to watch it yet, but they filmed part of this in New York. There's a lot of emptiness in central New York, but there is not really many parts of New York that look like the apocalypse has taken place.
I don't know. I watch a lot of Fox News and they'd say otherwise, Tim. But seriously, folks, evidently, if they're talking about where they're going to be doing their second season, it seems obvious at this point that it's been renewed.
But seriously, folks, don't watch a lot of Fox News.
Over at Paramount Plus, the Star Trek series Strange New Worlds, which is currently in production for its third season, has been renewed for season 4. But
nothing can bring me down. Wait, but
the animated Star Trek series Lower Decks will be ending this fall with season 5.
Who do I have killed?
I hope the Moopsie drinks their bones.
Yeah, we're not surprised by Strange New Worlds. As a matter of fact, Kim and I have had the conversation multiple occasions. We wouldn't be surprised if they just went ahead and redid the original Star Trek with the New Worlds cast. It is just that much of a home run across the board. It really is.
And it's such a great group.
Conversely, Lower Decks, on the one hand, I get it. I totally get it. They got promoted at the start of season 4, which means they're not technically Lower Decks anymore. So, you know, thematically, the show has reached its conclusion, but these characters need to stay. These characters need more animated programming, and I kind of hope they become live action characters as well. I'll just say that.
I mean, they sort of have in some cases.
This is the best thing on Paramount Plus, these two shows. No joke, no hyperbole.
Absolutely. Yep.
And so it's a little demoralizing to me that people are watching Halo when they could be watching this.
Okay, as always, we close out with what's been keeping us busy over the last week. And as we sort of indicated earlier, I started playing Baldur's Gate 3. And I'm not super far into the game, but as mentioned, I spent a lot of time creating my character. And I have gotten connected to a bunch of druids who are doing some really bad things when my character is also a druid and totally not understanding WTF they're doing. Anyway, it's good stuff. I like it.
But her hair is on point.
Yeah, I mean, my hair is killing it. I basically went with the Becky Lynch when she had the braids in her hairstyle. Very important. So yeah, anyway, Baldur's Gate 3, really fun. I'll talk more about it later. Raul, how about you?
So Barbie fashion designer for the D&D crowd?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, yeah, Conan O'Brien on Hot Ones is bonkers. Hot Ones from First We Feast and hosted by Sean Evans is, quote, the show with hot questions and even hotter wings. You know the show. This is where celebrities on a publicity tour end up eating hot wings. And it's because oftentimes, quote, my kids love this show. In fact, I just watched the Gwyneth Paltrow episode and she said exactly that. But the Conan O'Brien appearance on Hot Ones was on another level. Given the way he behaved during this show, you'd think he was on medication, either legal or not. And honestly, given the doctor he brought with him, I'd say it was the latter. I will be honest, Evans runs a really great interview, and this one was no different. The questions were clever and in-depth, and O'Brien was surprisingly frank and honest, but it was in the eating of the wings that things quickly went off script. O'Brien dared to suggest that no wing would break him. Rather than taking little nibbles of the wings, which get hotter with each passing question, he gnawed the whole thing, stripping them bare, oftentimes drowning them in pools of hot sauce before downing the wing. Before it was over, he was guzzling hot sauce straight from the bottle. He made it through the whole lineup without ever breaking. It was astounding to watch. It was a masterclass in what I would call physical comedy. This was just impressive on numerous different levels. It's amazing to watch. It's on YouTube. Go ahead and watch that episode of Hot Ones. It's fantastic.
Okay, Tim, how about you?
Of course, it was WrestleMania weekend last weekend, and it was overall just quality, just excellent. Yes, we are in a new era in WWE as they beat you over the head with multiple times, indicating that this company is Triple H's baby now, and it's definitely reflecting in a bunch of factors. We had some quality matches all weekend long. We got Cody Rhodes finally finishing the story in a match that was just all sorts of fan service. If a match can ever be perfectly overbooked, that's exactly what it was. It was just, it was goofy, but it made sense. There was just subtle callbacks to just little things like, you know, Seth Rollins coming in the Shield and Roman Reigns, who Seth Rollins, you know, hit with a chair when he broke up the Shield like almost 10 years ago. But then Roman decided rather than go after Cody, he went after Rollins and that cost him the match. That's storytelling and just, you know, other fun matches. We had Drew McIntyre win the world championship from Seth Rollins, but then, you know, when he was rubbing it in CM Punk's face, he took him out, which led to a cash in for Damian Priest to get the title, which was a fun moment that everyone expected. You know, the night one best match was, of course, Sami Zayn ending the longest running Intercontinental Champion reign of all time by Gunther. Yes, in a great match where he did a brainbuster. He did a brainbuster in WWE. That's not supposed to happen, but yeah, it was great. R-Truth got his moment with the tag team titles. It was just a lot of fun. I'm just looking forward to where they're going from here in WWE. It's a good time to be a wrestling fan, no matter which company you're into.
So the guys will joke, of course, how I am not a wrestling fan, despite the fact that everyone else on this podcast is. And yet, I think this is the first WrestleMania I ever watched. I didn't by any means watch all of it. In fact, I pulled it up on Peacock after it had concluded and rewound back maybe 10 minutes to watch the big fight at the end, the wrap up. And yeah, overbooked is, I guess, one way of describing it. I wouldn't have been surprised if Ric Flair and Hulk Hogan had put in appearances at some point. And let's be clear, I'm glad that Philadelphia's Lincoln Financial Field does not have a roof, or I wouldn't have put it past them to have Sting rappel in, as Kim would have put it, very slowly,
yes,
put in appearance as well. It got absurd at the end, but I would also say it got absurd in all the best ways. It was just silliness. It was a whole lot of fun and nonsense. And if you are a wrestling fan, I think this is exactly what you were looking for.
Yeah. And night one, being in Philadelphia, of course, you had some giant mask guys come out of nowhere to help Rey Mysterio and his team win the match. And they unmask and, oh, it's Jason Kelsey. And that just the place just went absolutely nuts. Yes. Which was then very funny as they're all celebrating the ring. And these two guys, him and Lane Johnson, just dwarf all the wrestlers. And it is just a very funny visual. They were just so much bigger. But yeah, it was a fun show.
Awesome. All right, David, how about you?
Well, it's still a little premature because we're only halfway through, but we have started watching Fallout, and we didn't talk about it in the podcast, but before the show, we were having a conversation about the oddity of how Amazon still is a bit indecisive about its release strategy. This time they went ahead and aired all season one episodes simultaneously, which means a lot of people are through the 8 episodes already. We've caught up through 4, and I don't want to oversell it. It's not perfect by any stretch. But there have been 4 or 5 moments in the show so funny that like Kim and I would just like pause and laugh uncontrollably. One in particular is just outrageously funny. And while Kim and I watched The Unicorn and we were sad when it was canceled, the reality is Fallout is the type of show that Walton Goggins should be making instead. It's just better for him. It suits his personality more. And really, really impressed with the world building. And, you know, I'm one of those people who's devout in the belief that Christopher Nolan is the talent, but Jonathan Nolan, his brother, is the storyteller who is just better in every way. And this is the latest proof. And Kim, there was even like a surprising reference to Person of Interest, wasn't there? And you had to point it out to me because I wouldn't have caught it.
Yeah, there was. I couldn't help but see it. Obviously, Jonathan Nolan is playing fan service to people who have watched both shows, which is kind of fun. Walton Goggins is fantastic, but there are a lot of really great performances on this show. Ella Purnell, who is the lead, is really terrific. I wasn't sold on her in the trailers necessarily, but she's got it. She's absolutely got it. As David said, we're only halfway through, but if the rest of the episodes are like this one, I will strongly recommend Fallout.
Yeah, we probably hadn't binged anything in a calendar year. I mean, there's 3 or 4 shows that we're still in the middle of, like the most recent season of Umbrella Academy, and we haven't finished Last of Us yet or Silo, but this is going to be the second time in a month we have binged an entire season in a very short period of time, and that speaks highly to the quality of Three Body Problem previously and now Fallout, which definitely has us going, ooh, I think we can watch another one.
I'm excited to hear that because it will take me a week or two to get to, but I do plan on watching it. We do need to have this conversation at some point. I am a little disappointed it released all at once rather than weekly, but I will be a very strict grader on the world building and how much they stick to the Fallout canon that's established in the video games because I'm a big fan of those. But from what I've heard so far without getting any spoilers, that it's pretty darn good. So I'm really looking forward to finally getting to it.
That'll actually be an interesting conversation, Tim, because, you know, as we've had this conversation so many times over the years, the only Fallout game I have played all the way through is Fallout 4, but I really like the implementation of the ideas I know from the franchise. But since you have such, you know, a totality of knowledge that I'm lacking, I can't wait to hear what you think.
Thank you for listening to Streaming Into the Void. Please consider subscribing wherever you listen to podcasts. And we welcome your feedback. Remember that we're on social media at Streaming Void and online at streamingvoid.com. If you like what you're hearing, please consider becoming a supporter on Patreon at patreon.com/streamingvoid. Be sure to watch for us again next week.